This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 272 for Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me once again, Megan Townsend. Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going fantastic, and it's been a couple weeks since you and I have spoken. We took a break. The podcast was just not, it didn't happen last week because I was just too busy with client work. Unfortunately, I wanted to catch up with Hammond, but we're going to have to reschedule because he was just back from like vacation in France. So I wanted to live vicariously, but also tease him.
Be like, yeah, you bastard. Man, I want to go to France. We talked about last time I was on how much I want to go to France.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I was disappointed that I couldn't do it, but I just had too much on my plate. So thanks for patience, everybody that's out there in listener land. And if you're wanting to find Megan, you can just find her at Nerdasmic across most social media platforms and YouTube. That'd be the easiest way, mm-hmm. I think, to kind of check her stuff out while you listen to this episode. Straight up, I'm just going to let you know, we're going to talk about Infinity War. It's one of the reasons we delayed the show is that we kind of wanted enough time for listeners to see it. And we're going to talk spoilers, but we'll get to that later. But it is coming, so be patient. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk about it. You and I have actually talked about it a little bit. In the meantime, so it should be a good show. Also, just before the show, I tried something else new. We do have a spoiler room in the Discord for the Patreon. And so I put out a quick post on Discord and said, like, hey, if people have thoughts, like, let me know and throw it in the spoiler section because Megan and I are going to record shortly. So I got some responses from Chris and Alistair and things like that. So we'll try to dig into those and kind of understand what people, you know, were. They were pretty general thoughts. Like, it wasn't a long time to have a conversation in the Discord.
Right.
So, which is cool because then you just kind of get people's like surface kind of like three sentence opinions, right? So it's in its purest form without getting into details. It's just like, no, thought it was good or thought it wasn't good or here's where my concerns are. And so that kind of stuff I think should be interesting.
Yeah.
But before we dive in too far, one of the things that I have been doing lately, now that spring is finally here, and I know I'm mentioning weather and I'm not supposed to, but I don't care because it's beautiful and sunny and I've been sitting outside on my patio at least once daily. It's something I'm just trying to just do, you know, like you get frustrated sitting there kind of doling through Canadian Netflix and like, oh, there's nothing on or you're like, no, this is the third episode of the show. I should probably not watch another one. And I realized, yeah, like, this is dumb. Like, I am sitting here and staring at my empty balcony on a sunny day, and I should just be sitting 10 feet to the east, which would put me outside of my wall and in the fresh air. So yeah. I've been grabbing some comic books that I'm behind on and some art books that I've been meaning to buy, or not to buy, but meaning to read. I've bought them. And it's been fantastic. And this weekend, was it weekend? No, it was actually, gosh, it's Wednesday already. Monday afternoon, I think, was one of the nicer days. And I had my coffee break outside. And I was reading an art book that arrived from Kickstarter. And it is Art Book 1, the XL edition from Derek Laufman. I threw a picture up
on your Instagram.
Yeah, I was just about to say. So if you follow me on Instagram, it's just my name. You can go and see the cover of the book. There's a link to Derek's Instagram. He's prolific on Instagram. He posts all the time. He does a lot of chibi artwork. I got a lot of inspiration from his work when I was doing my chibi superhero series. Mm. And I put my own spin on it, but he does such great kind of concept work. And he did a lot of work in video games, like I don't want to say retro games, but like side scroller platformer indie game, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So, like, kind of Japanese RPG, like that kind of style stuff. Okay. So they're not necessarily chibi, but they're meant to be kind of like small graphics, but they have to have a lot of detail. And so a lot of that concept art is in his first art book. Now, I own the second art book, and this was a reprint of the first, which I did have, but the first was a much smaller book. And
like thinner book?
Yes, like in all sense of the, it was like a 5x7 and it was like 60 pages and it was just an artist sketchbook, just like a cool little way to throw, you know, $10 or $15 to an artist and support them and, you know, get some cool stuff. But then of course the chibi thing took off for him, and then he's got a comic and all those other things going on. So he reprinted, when he did the second book, he really enjoyed the format so much. And he had the following that he thought he would try to reprint the first book and now have a format for all subsequent artist sketchbooks where they're, I want to say they're, it's not 9x11 because it's not that big. It's more like 8x10. Okay. But it's a good size art book, fits in your backpack nice. Like it's something that you can just kind of take anywhere and enjoy. And in addition to that, he also put in more work that wasn't in the little one that he published a few years ago. So you can check all that stuff out at DerekLoffman.com. And again, there's a link directly from my Instagram as well. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to kind of flip through. It's one of those things that you can kind of take, you know, about an hour. Just kind of flip through. Because I mean, it's nothing to read. Like it's just a collection of his sketches and things like that. But what I really like about Art Book 1, I'd have to go back and look at 2. I don't really remember, but there's a lot of rough sketches. So they're digital.
Which is nice.
Yeah. No, I really enjoy that.
I feel like a lot of people don't do that. And sometimes it's nice to see the process of art. Mm-hmm. I was on watching you stream a client project that you were doing the other night. And it was really cool watching, because I've seen all your finished work.
Right.
But I think I only saw you do something like an in-progress piece one time.
Yeah.
So that was like my first time actually sitting down and watching you draw something. And it was really, I don't know, I like seeing the artist process. I think it's super interesting and it's super gratifying to see someone, like, you know, just go from like little pencil sketches to like a fully colored finished piece. I think that's so cool. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's I enjoy it too. Like I enjoy watching other artists do it. Which is one of those other things that I'm trying to do a little bit more of, is catching up and watching artists stream. Or I find it hard to watch streams and work. So we had Matt Rhodes on Comics Coast to Coast a couple weeks ago. He's a concept artist at BioWare in Edmonton.
Right.
He also has his own project called Tellurian. MattRhodesArt.com, RHODES. Fantastic stuff. Almost similar to Piper Thibodeau's daily paintings. He's not doing it daily, but he has a series. Like it is an ongoing, every time he does a personal update, he's updating this Tellurian story. And it's totally worth checking out. He's telling the story with no words. So it's only pictures.
Which I love.
Yeah. So you can't just glance at it. Like you really have to take in every last little pose, details, story beat, like all that kind of stuff has got to be observed, because otherwise you're lost in the next panel. It's like, wait a minute, why are they running? Or, you know, like what happened? And like you get the end. It's almost like you get the before and the after, but then your brain has to fit in what happened in between. Like it's really, really cool work. Anyway, he does a lot of streaming. And when I was so busy last week, I was watching some of his streams, kind of had them up on Twitch, I think, on kind of like the side on my second monitor. And it was video on demand, so it wasn't live. But the issue that I had was that he was talking on Discord with people. So it was very easy to listen to the conversation, which wasn't necessarily relating to the piece that I was working on, but in art in general, and do my own work. But then the issue is that I'm also a fan of his work, and I'm watching him do this drawing, and I want to know how he did it. And when he gets to a certain point, it's not like he stops the conversation with other artists and says, okay, so now this is where I'm, you know, addressing this light bit on this, you know, area, or my goal here was X, Y, Z. And I look over at the image and go, it's like, crap, well, he's half done. And I wanted to know how he did this stuff.
Right.
So I think I rewound the video like 3 times, going like, I missed when he drew the bush again. Like it just, you know, so
that kind of reminds me of like Bob Ross. I ever watched like the Joy of Painting with Bob Ross?
Yes,
same thing. It's like I kind of sometimes will put him on in the background because he's nice to listen to while you're writing or doing something.
Yep.
He's really, really chill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look up and it's like, when did that mountain get there?
Yeah. Surprise. Exactly. Surprise. Yeah.
It's very sudden.
Yeah. Have you seen Have you seen the Deadpool trailer where he dresses up like Bob Ross?
Yes. Yes, I love it. I really like the music video that's going around right now, because the theme song from Deadpool is that From Ashes song sung by Celine Dion.
Yes.
Have you seen this video?
Not the video. I saw someone posted something the other day. They were just walking down a city street, and this like 30-foot-long trailer pulling Deadpool in like a reclining nude position, except for he's not nude, he's in his Deadpool outfit, just kind of drives by slowly at about 20 miles an hour, blasting this song.
That's funny too. But yeah. No, this one is, I don't know what it is. So it's Celine Dion, like, you know, she's extra, she's wearing a beautiful dress, and she's in this auditorium, and like her, you know, voice is soaring, and it's like an empty auditorium, so it's super artistic. And then Deadpool comes out on stage, but he's wearing like a pair of like 4-inch stilettoed boots, and he starts dancing with her. And it's amazing.
No,
it's
amazing. Seen that.
So like, it wasn't Ryan Reynolds. I follow Ryan Reynolds on Instagram as well. He's like, this wasn't me. This wasn't me dancing. It was me doing other things in the video, but, oh, sorry. I just bumped my mic by mistake. This dancer, he's a well-known dancer named Giannis Marshall. He's French. And he's been known as like the guy who dances in heels. So they hired him to do this whole thing. I don't know. It's fun. I don't know. Watching the video is hilarious because it just seems like such a Deadpool thing to do. And it's so extra and so dramatic. And I don't know. It's funny.
The marketing for these films is just ridiculous.
It is brilliant. Yeah. Like the marketing for the first Deadpool, especially like the fact that like some of the marketing made it look like a romantic comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well, it was released on Valentine's Day.
It was like, yeah, I know, which is great, but it was like, you know, it was like, oh, like, love only comes once in a lifetime or something. It had, like, stupid slogans like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for Deadpool, it had that billboard where it was, like, a skull, a piece of poo, and an L.
Yeah.
Skull poo-L.
Yeah.
And it was just really funny. I don't know. Like, the marketing has been top-notch for this movie.
I feel like there was an interview with Ryan Reynolds where that was, like, a dare. Like it was almost like, yeah, right. You guys aren't going to make that into a billboard. Challenge accepted.
I don't know. That's the character you could do that with, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Really? Well, it's the character, and also it's kind of the actor that has enough clout to be like, yeah, we can do this. We can pull this off. I've only ever really watched like the proper trailer for Deadpool once.
Really?
I mean,
the first one?
Yeah. No, like the second movie. Is it just called Deadpool 2, or is it
X-Force? Deadpool
2. I mean, it looks good. I mean, I'm trying to steer away from the real trailers just because I find that so much of those movies are these little one-off jabs.
Yeah.
And they put so much of that in the trailer, and it's just like, I know there's going to be more to the movie than just these, but like I don't want any of those comedic beats to be lost.
Yes. No, it's true. It's true.
But when does that come out? Do we know?
When does Deadpool come out?
Yeah. I'm going to look that up right now.
I'm looking it up too.
It's a race. Go.
You can probably beat me.
Well, I accidentally went to Deadpool.com, so we'll figure out what that says. Maybe there's going to be a giant date at the top. May 18th. Wow, that's like next week.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Interesting. I love
great.
Is it Flashdance that he's referencing with the bullets?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I love it.
It's so good. So good.
I love Deadpool so much. I think Deadpool is one of my favorite just Marvel people in general. I don't know. He is the best example of an anti-hero, I think.
Yeah, it's not normally my thing, but you're right. It's the comedy, I think, maybe.
Yes, it is. And the fact that he breaks the fourth wall. And I think a lot of people really appreciate Deadpool because he kind of breaks the mold a little bit. He's Canadian. So he's actually like a canon Canadian character. They said he's like, no, I'm from Saskatchewan. It's a thing in the comics that he's actually mentioned. Apparently Wolverine is Canadian too. So at one point they have like a little like bro moment. He's like, oh, hey, my fellow Canuck, you know, just talking with him, you know, being, you know, and of course I don't think Wolverine particularly likes him very much, but
no, I don't think Wolverine remembers where he's from. He knows he's from Canada, but like, he doesn't have any memory of it. So like, he's not patriotic in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of just whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, just the fact that like Deadpool, like trying to flirt with Spider-Man all the time and he's always breaking the fourth wall but he does have, I think like he's canonically pansexual or something. So a lot of like the queer community is really into him for that reason.
Right.
And, he's disabled in the sense that, you know, has cancer, but it's right. always regenerating all the time. So, I don't know. I think because he's so out there, I think that's what people really enjoy about him.
Yeah. There's some really good, I mean, some of my favorite Deadpool drawings are by Scotty Young. I'm not sure if you're familiar mm-hmm. with his work,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the Deadpool Spider-Man stuff that he does is just hilarious. Like there's this one from, it's years and years and years old, but it's just, it captures the two of them so perfectly when they hang out. And it's basically Deadpool kind of got his hand on his chin and he's looking at Spider-Man like, I think that works. And he has decked out Spider-Man in so much just gear. Like it's guns and grenades and ammo and like there's stuff on his back. Like, I mean, Spider-Man looks like a walking tank and Spider-Man's like, sure. Like he looks so, like, I feel like I'd have to look at the drawing again, but I feel like he's got, you know, he's kind of holding a gun, but like by his he's pinching it like with his fingers. It's like, do I really, you know, like, how do I hold this? You know, because it's just obviously not his thing. And I mean, and a deeper weirdness to it, of course, is that Uncle Ben was shot. So like, it's an odd sort of thing to have on Spider-Man, but neither one of them are upset. It's more of a silly drawing, but it's so good. The silhouettes are fantastic because you get like Spider-Man's skinny little legs, and then like from the waist up, it's just like all stuff. Yeah, it's really, really well done.
Boy.
So I've got a question for you about Deadpool then. We're entering into a world where now that Disney and Fox have merged their giant conglomerate things, more and more of the Marvel universe is accessible or more easily accessible to Marvel Studios. Do you think that we will ever see Deadpool in any of the other proper kind of like Marvel canon movies?
I hope so. I think now, I know he's very closely tied to the X-Men,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, Fox owns X-Men, is that mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
Yeah. And now that they're kind of blending in together, I think I'd like to see him interact a bit more with the X-Men. I'd like to see a crossover with the Avengers and the X-Men as well, because Scarlet mm-hmm. Witch is, she's a mutant. And the only reason they weren't able to say that at the time, because she was part of a different property, but she is canonically a mutant from the X-Men.
And so, they have her in both films, right?
They do, yeah. So there's like this weird like shift of timelines, it feels like, because you had, you know, it was baby Wanda at the time, like mm-hmm. For was it X-Men? Was it First Class?
It wasn't First Class. I believe it was.
It was like two different timelines going on.
Yeah.
Or no, it was when they were trying to break out Magneto from his prison and. Dr. Xavier was able to walk again, but he was taking this thing that made him suppress his powers, and he was cranky and mad and upset. And
you're right. It was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
But it was
the second one.
Yeah.
The second one with James McAvoy.
Yes. Yeah. The one where they mixed the two.
Or Days of Future Past or something.
Yes. You're right. That's right. Yep.
So they had Quicksilver, so Peter Maximoff, he was like the kid who, like, his whole scene where he runs around the room and it's going, you're like, House of the Rising Sun or something was playing in the background, and he's just like, he's kind of taking his time leisurely, but there's this big epic gun battle going on.
Mm-hmm.
His younger sister, like, at one point he just holds her in his lap, but she was like a baby, like a little kid at the time.
Oh,
so
okay.
It canonically they're twins. So like, that's why they're known as the Maximoff twins. So that's why in Age of Ultron, when Quicksilver was killed, it was kind of a weird thing. It was like, okay. It was very upsetting mm-hmm. for a lot of people. And he was in it for like a grand total of 2 seconds. Like, he was definitely written as a throwaway, which is kind of sad, because I think Quicksilver is a really, really cool character. It has the potential to be.
Right.
So I don't know. I'd like to see a bit more of an all over crossover, I think. I think, you know, this is such an, Marvel is such an interesting universe in the sense that all of their characters exist at the same time in the same realm. Whereas with DC, there's a bunch of, there's like Earth 1 and Earth 2 and like different timelines and everything where all the characters exist simultaneously, but not together.
Right.
So I think that the fact that Marvel does exist in one solid universe, but is still able to have different stories, I think is really interesting. And I cinematically, sorry, it would be really great to see Deadpool with the Avengers, because I think he interacts with them at some point. I think he and Thor are buddies too.
Oh man, I mean, I think friendship. Everybody at some point was an Avenger. Like the team yeah. roster just kind of rotates. I know Wolverine was an Avenger at one point.
Oh, was he? I yeah. didn't know that actually.
Yeah. I feel like the only thing that I think Deadpool would lose if and when they cross it over with other characters, and I would imagine you're probably right. I think X-Men would probably be the first time you'd see Deadpool in a non-Deadpool movie. And that is, yeah. Is Deadpool going to be the same when he's not breaking the fourth wall? Are they going to be able to break the fourth wall in an X-Men movie?
I think they could do that in a really interesting way. It's like, there's this Vine. Do you remember Vine? I don't know if you ever followed
it. I do remember Vine, yeah.
There was this one Vine where this person kept just looking at the camera and everyone around them like, what are you looking at? There's nothing there. And I feel like if Deadpool's that kind of character, he'd be like, oh, he just look off into the distance. Like he's looking into the camera, like he's on The Office or something. And everyone's what are you doing? There's nothing there. I think that would be a really funny tie-in to the whole breaking the fourth wall, but only he's the only one seeing it. Everyone's like, what? Stop it.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. What are you doing? I think it'd be a funny callback to that.
I think that
still play with his character.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that, because that's basically where my brain went. Alistair and I were talking about this. I can't remember whether it was Discord or just a text message, but essentially we were talking about that potential crossover. And if you, the audience, are getting that fourth wall conversation from Deadpool, you're in the middle of a city street in Manhattan, there's a bunch of cabs around, whatever, and he's ranting about something and he's looking at you like, da, 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 and he's on this long kind of fourth wall rant. And then you cut to, I don't know, X-Men or Spider-Man or somebody else down the street, and they're looking at Deadpool and he is just talking to no one.
That'd be hilarious.
He's just kind of going off and everybody's just, there's and no comments. There's no, people are just looking like, okay. this guy has a lot of guns and is clearly crazy.
It's true. Well, that's the thing. He's known as he's a little bit unhinged.
Yeah.
Right. He is a little bit crazy, but it's, I don't know. I feel like that'd be such a good tie into the character, but also to kind of, I don't know. I think
it would be hard for them not to overdo it. Like once, maybe twice in the whole film,
maybe twice.
I think, cause I definitely do not want Tom Holland to look at the camera as Spider-Man and wink or something. I really enjoy what Marvel has done in terms of how they've built up this completely imaginary out there world, but it's grounded in just enough reality in terms of how it's made and the production value that you definitely feel like you're on the ground. You don't feel like you're watching a cartoon. You don't feel like you're watching Star Wars. It's just close enough to today in terms of the future tech and this, well, maybe not the stuff that's happening in terms of technology, but in terms of the real world, it's still just Manhattan. It's not like it's future Manhattan, right?
Yeah.
It's all very grounded. And in terms of the people that they're trying to save are us, right? And I feel if they get too weird with it, then it's just okay, now you're just turning into it. Now it gets, it starts to pull you out of the film and remind you you're sitting in a movie theater, I feel like where Deadpool does that, from the beginning all the way through the end, it's never something that's jarring. Whereas if you do that when you're in something like a Spider-Man film or an Avengers film, then I would get pulled out of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like as far as Deadpool's concerned, even when he does cameos in other people's comic books, he still talks to the fourth wall.
Oh yeah.
I feel like as Deadpool, I think that's sort of just an accepted trait of his.
Yeah. I'm sure
other
people
call him out and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like that would be,
I'm sure he would do it and I would be okay with him doing it.
But yeah. I don't want anyone else doing it.
No, exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. Steve Rogers winking at me is not
get away with that. Deadpool is the only person who can get away with that.
Well, we can now, I guess, move on and dig into the big purple bully in the room. which is Avengers Infinity War. And if you have not seen this film, Megan and I cannot talk about it without spoiling it. Like, every single second of this is worth just going and experiencing for yourself. So be warned. If you haven't seen it, check out. We'll catch you next time, or come back and listen when you have seen Infinity War. If you haven't seen Infinity War and you're currently using the internet, good luck.
Yes.
Because now that it's been a week.
Especially if you're on Tumblr, man, because literally the day after it came out, I'm so glad I saw it on the day it came out. It actually came out on my birthday, so I went to go see it on my birthday, for my birthday. And man, like, literally I got home later that night and I saw spoilers for it. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, I managed to avoid them all, but I was internet dark for that weekend. I saw it came out on a Thursday night, Friday, and I went to go see it on a Tuesday. So it really wasn't too long. And I had a lot of other social things going on that weekend because my birthday was a couple days after yours. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't on the computer much. But the one thing that I was avoiding, I avoided Twitter. Instagram does not seem to be so bad with spoilers, but I avoided Twitter and Facebook for a couple of days, which really isn't that hard. I feel like I've been talking a lot. So what, just kind of on the surface, walking out of that movie, like what was your first 2 cents?
My first 2 cents, I'll get into it, but I felt like something was missing, and I'll get into that a little bit more later because I have a full argument about that. But
like as, it, as not like
whole,
it.
I liked it. I think I'm gonna, it's like you were saying, you just because you like something doesn't mean you can't criticize it.
Yes.
I liked this film. I thought it was a good film. I thought it was engaging. I thought the pacing was really excellent for it, which is really hard to do when you have a film that has so many different characters. It had a good, even balance of comedy and tragedy. Like, after a tragic moment, it would really be really good at balancing out with a comedic moment afterwards. So there was I kind of felt like I was getting whiplash a little bit, though, because one minute I was like, oh no, I'm devastated. The next minute I'm laughing. So it was kind of felt like a little bit crazy. But I liked it. I mean, as much as you can enjoy watching all of your favorite characters die, it was a really, really good movie. I did really, really enjoy it.
And I think that's important to talk about right away, rather than trying to dance around it for the whole conversation. The good guys don't win.
No.
So even though it is a good movie, it's not a feel-good movie.
No.
You know, like, most Captain America movies, you walk out of them going like, yeah, and you want to go for a run, and you'd save the day, and this is just like, well, shit.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking back to Wonder Woman, though. Like, Wonder Woman didn't really end on a feel-good note either.
That's true.
You know, like, you know, it was sort of a little bit of a romantic tragedy at that point at the end. But it was still, you still walked out. I mean, I still walked out feeling hella powerful.
Yes.
But no, this one, it definitely makes you feel very small. It makes you feel very, very insignificant. And it hurts. Like, I was physically in pain. I was very, very sad throughout the entirety of that film, aside from the parts where I was giggling.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there were some funny moments too.
Yeah.
Which, I think they did a very good job of keeping some humor in Infinity War, which is, in the grand scheme of things, not a happy story, but then they didn't try and make it into a Guardians of the Galaxy film or make it into Thor Ragnarok. Like, they still had a very serious note, but it was the comedic characters that were making the jokes that, you know, that would make you, that would give you some reprise in the middle of some really intense situations. You know, it was Drax or Rocket or whatever.
Yes, as soon as you said Drax, it was like that one moment with Drax, he's like, I'm invisible.
See, now,
you can't see me. I thought that was great.
So I thought that was funny when he first said it, but then they're like, then they hang on the joke too long, and you're just like, okay, I got it. I got it in the first 30 seconds. And I feel
thinks that's Drax's character, though. I feel like Drax overdoes jokes.
I think Guardians of the Galaxy overdoes jokes. I think that's just how they write those characters. Like, they just quill everybody. They just, the funniest people, or the funniest characters in Guardians of the Galaxy are Gamora and Rocket for me, because my sense of humor is more about the one-liner as you walk into the room. It's the thing that, you know, that Rocket mumbles to himself as as he does something else, like he's flipping switches and getting ready to pilot something, and he says he's grumbling about something, but it is hilarious. Yeah. And you have to be paying attention. But what I don't like is when they bring the movie to a grinding halt to talk about Drax thinking that he's invisible for like 5 minutes. And so if that for me was one of the things that takes me out of it.
For me, I think it was more of just like, okay, I actually get a mental break from all the tragedy that's happening.
And that's true. All the lighter moments do kind of give you kind of like a breath from the intense. Because it's also intense visually. Like your eyes are tired.
It is. Yeah. It's a brain workout. It really is, just to kind of focus on what's going on and what you're seeing and what you're processing that's happening on the screen. Like, I knew we were in for a bad ride the minute Loki was killed. Oh, that was a hard first minute.
Like the first 5 minutes, like.
Yep. Loki is my favorite character.
Yeah.
Out of every single Marvel film, Loki has always been kind of my favorite character because I think he's so dynamic and he's so engaging and he's I don't know. I also really like Tom Hiddleston a lot. I think he's done amazing things with that character. And he's so charming. So how can you not like him? But damn, no, in that first 5 minutes, I was like, okay, we're going for that tone. Excellent.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, like,
here we go.
I remember you and I even maybe talking about it at the end of Ragnarok, like thinking about Loki's role as we move forward. Is he going to be the constant trickster? Is it going to be the double cross trope? And then I'm thinking in the first few minutes of Infinity War, I'm like, well, it's not going to be the double cross.
No, it's so, I mean, like, and I was worried about it too. He's like, fine, kill away. And then he starts to like injure Thor. And he's like, okay, no, like stop. And you can see the change in his character and in his personality. And it's like, it killed me.
And
it
killed
Loki too, evidently. So,
and it's one of those things where it doesn't, like they never really give you a final on that kind of stuff. Like Thor kind of rolls, he's sad, but he rolls his eyes and says like, well, he's died before. And
yes,
so you're talking about gods, sort of like that's how they're portrayed, right? I mean, like they're other beings. Thor in the movie says that he's 1500 years old, which I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that kind of like, that ethereal nature to the whole Thor mythos kind of comes in, but at the same time, it's not like they threw Loki off a cliff. They didn't throw him into the rainbow void. Like Thanos very slowly crushes his windpipe.
Yeah.
And it's his eyes almost pop out of his head. Like it is visceral.
It's gruesome. And it's a gruesome scene too.
It feels human. It doesn't feel like he's crushing the windpipe of a god, which do they have windpipes? Like, you know, like it brings you into this whole idea of like, okay, yes, these are kind of ethereal beings and heroes, but they still have a humanity to them. Like they still have a physical form. Like they still have to, you know, avoid a certain level of danger, you know, like for example, the Hulk in the first Avengers film does the whole puny god bit where he smashes Loki all over the place, which would have killed anybody. But then Loki just has like a funny comedic squeal at the end of it where he's just kind of like, you know, like that really hurt actually. And so you get the idea that, okay, well, he's strong, but he's obviously able to be incapacitated. Like he's beat up so much that he's kind of out of the fight at that point. So, so like you get like a limit to their power, I guess. And then they use that to set Thanos up brilliantly because he kills Loki and he beats the snot out of the Hulk. And then you're like, okay, so Thanos is a badass. Good to know.
Yes. And like, we always knew that too. I mean, like we've seen Thanos throughout the entirety of the series, like from the first Avengers, that very, very first moment of Thanos. And we see little glimpses of him throughout the rest of the films where he's talking to people and he's telling people to do things. And it's like, you only see him for split seconds, but he's built up to be this really, really terrifying villain. I feel like we're getting to that point where I'm starting to criticize a little bit. I really liked what they did with Thanos as a whole. I thought that he's a very, very compelling villain. He's incredibly compelling. But we discussed this a little bit more before. But I found that my issue with it, I felt what I thought was missing was why he was a villain. I feel like they kind of read it as like, oh, he's just a villain, so he does this just because. That's kind of, I found it was like a bit of a throwaway. And I felt it was like a bit of a continuity error from the very first time we see him up to now. Like we've seen him as this mad, power hungry, villainous character. And in this film, he's written as he wants to better the galaxy, and he has his own ways of doing it, which are not necessarily good ways.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to better the galaxy. And the sense I got from him was he regretted having to do what he was doing. He was like, I'm the only one who can make these difficult decisions.
Mm.
And I had a hard time grasping why he felt he had to make those particular types of decisions. I felt that was something that was a really missing concept of his character. And I think it boils down to the lack of discussion about death. And I know we talked about a little bit that before privately, how, like, you know, we didn't really need another character. Like, I know, like, having Lady Death in there would have been way too much.
Right.
I think audiences, like, just another character thrown in.
And for people that haven't read the comics, Lady Death is a character in the Marvel comics where, it's Thanos' love interest, right? Like, that's.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at the end of the first Avengers, what the Chitauri overlord or whatever, what he says is to challenge them is to court death. And he turns and you see his face and he grins, and that's kind of it.
Right.
And I hadn't really been reading the comic books at that point. So someone told me later, it's like, you know, his whole thing is like, he's in love with death. Right. And I'm like, okay, like, what do you mean though? He's like, no, he's just in love with death. And that could mean as an entity, that could mean as a thing, that could mean as a religion. He's just in
love
with death.
As an obsession. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't get that obsession from him. I didn't get that like, I'm into death thing.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that because he was so upset over Gamora, which was a really hard scene to watch. Like, it was a very emotional scene, and it did kind of show that he does have a little bit of humanity in him, which makes him super compelling anyway. But the fact that he was so torn up about it, and the fact that he seemed so torn up about the fact that he had to kill half the galaxy, it made me wonder why he's going out of his way to get all these Infinity Stones to kill half the galaxy just because.
Right.
He has infinite amounts of power. We've been built up to know that the Infinity Stones and the Infinity Gauntlet has infinite amount of power. So why did he feel the need to do the evil way? Why did he feel the need to kill half the galaxy when you have this infinite power, you could basically make more resources, which is whole reason for, you know, his reason for killing everyone was there's not enough resources. Half the people of the galaxy are going hungry, or they're starving, or they're dying of illness because there's not enough resources to care for all of them. We got to wipe out half of them. Why not create more resources or create better circumstances for those people?
Right.
When you have that infinite power. I know that you were saying that, like, the Infinity Gauntlet was kind of like, it is a very overpowered item. But I feel like for Thanos in order to justify his reason for killing half the galaxy, I feel like even a mention of death would have been helpful, even if it wasn't like a person or like, I kind of got like a religious aspect from it. Like, if he believed this is a religious thing, I do this for death. It could have, I feel like, driven his character a bit more. I just feel like a core concept of his character was sort of stripped away in favor of making him more human, which I enjoyed, but it really confused me about why he was the bad guy.
Right.
Why, like, he felt the need to kill everyone.
If he's using death as like, well, death is the only real balance in the universe. Like, it's the only
true.
That, you know, like, that would have helped. And I think I had less of a problem with Thanos than I did the Infinity Gauntlet just in general. And when we were talking in the Discord spoiler chat earlier, Chris and I were going back and forth about a couple of things. And one of the things that kind of dawned on me was writing is better when you have limitations.
Yes.
And the Infinity Gauntlet is the opposite of that.
Yes.
Like, you, and especially when you put it in the hands of your villain. And
yes.
So we're all, I mean, from the very get-go, we have to keep Thanos from getting the stones. That's the mission in Infinity War. That's what all the Avengers are trying to do. They're trying to stop him from getting all six. There's one on each knuckle plus the wrist.
Six, yeah.
Yeah. And so they're trying to stop him. But, like, by the end of Act One, he's got three. So, like, so right away you're like, oh, shit. this is not going to go our way. So when you have that kind of power in the hands of the bad guy, for me, it becomes a real, like, well, now nothing really matters, because it doesn't matter what the good guys do. We've already established very early on in the film from a speech from Gamora that all Thanos has to do is think it and snap his fingers and it's done if he gets all the stones. So you're like, well, crap. So now all this running across a field and punching stuff really doesn't matter because of this gauntlet thing. And I drew the parallel between this and any episode of Star Trek where Q is in it. I don't like them. I've never liked the character. I hate those episodes. They go on forever, especially if there's any kind of time loop. Like, it just, that kind of stuff drives me crazy. And Chris also brought up in the Discord about how time travel in movies is so difficult to do right. And
it's true.
I like how they kind of do it in Avengers to a point. So to get, let me, to kind of jump right into the end in one of the more emotional parts of the movie when Vision dies twice. You have to watch it twice.
It was so bad.
So the whole idea is that one of the last stones is in the forehead of Vision, and in order to stop Thanos, the only way to do it is for Scarlet Witch to destroy the stone. She doesn't want to do it because she's in love with Vision, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, she does do it. She destroys the stone. Vision dies. He goes colorless and gray, which is a nod to, I think, to the white Vision in the comics. Yes. And so you think, okay, so they've stopped him. He got 5 of the 6. They destroyed one. They had to sacrifice. There's the death of one of the heroes that I knew was going to happen. And you're like, okay, so that's fine. And then Thanos just walks up to them and grabs his green stone and kind of twists time and just reverses. But he doesn't reverse all time. He just reverses the time in like that area or affecting that one person. Now that I find really interesting, because then you're not stuck in time loop so much as you're just affecting time around a certain entity or around a certain area, which I find way more interesting than being able to just kind of like loop time. It's one of the things I didn't like about Doctor Strange, the film, was the ending where he just kind of uses the time stone to constantly torture this Dormammu god thing. And it's like, okay, like you did it twice. I understood it. Now this is like the 4th or the 6th time we've watched, or the 7th time we've watched this clip. Like, can you please move on or find a more interesting way to do this? And I'm glad they didn't do that in Avengers. Infinity War for the end there. Like, they didn't rewind and make us watch the fight over again and have Thanos do something different. You know, like, they've really handled it really uniquely. But then, of course, when Thanos kills Vision, he rips the stone from his head with his bare hands, and it's way more visceral. Like, there's strands of, I don't know what they call it, nano DNA, or they refer to it as something technical in Wakanda, and neural pathways or something. And you can see that kind of stuff kind of like being pulled like
out of him. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about it sounds like a really weird thing to think about, but it reminded me of food. Like when you pull apart a stringy food, like not cheese, but like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to think of what it could be, but it's like a fibrous bread or something that when you pull it, it strings and they each start to snap individually. Like, it really felt organic when they did that.
It did. It was really neat. That animation was very, very... Oh,
the CG in this film is off the charts. The charts.
I do have one issue with some of the CG. I'll get to that later. But
I think I might know what you're talking about. But so then... So you get to watch, you have to watch Vision die twice, which is like twisting the knife over and over and over again. But then, of course, then Thanos has all these stones and he just snaps his fingers and things start to go to hell in a handbasket. And that's where I'm just kind of like, well, I knew that it wasn't going to be resolved in this movie. When it's one of two films, you know going in that you're not going to get the whole story. You're going to get to the end of really Act 2 or maybe halfway through it. In terms of like looking at it as a full story spread over two films. So I was going in expecting Empire Strikes Back, you know, like some of the good guys survive, some of the good guys don't. Ultimately the bad guys win the day, but not the war sort of idea. But I think that the gauntlet is what kind of takes me to a spot where like, well, I'm not really worried because, well, now we've got this crazy powerful thing in the hands of the bad guy. All we have to do is get it in the hands of the good guys and they can just fix everything because it's the undo gauntlet. Like, you can basically do anything. And that's where I think that, to tie back to what you're saying about Thanos's motivation, is I don't think they did a good enough job in the film of communicating it. But despite the fact that this gauntlet has this infinite power, several times it's mentioned, I think by Thanos, that the universe has limited resources, like it's a finite universe. maybe the gauntlet can't change that. Like, maybe that's the limitation. Again, that's a maybe. It wasn't. It's a speculation. It was not clear in the film that that is what they meant. This is me kind of like digging underneath the rock and trying to find a twig to grasp onto. But if that's the case, then that would explain why he's killing half the people as opposed to making more resources. But again, they did a very poor job of leading you to that trough to drink from.
Yeah. I don't know. When I think Infinity Gauntlet or Infinity, I think unlimited.
Yes. Yeah.
Infinite power.
Yeah.
So my reasoning was, okay, you have infinite power. Why was killing people the only option for you? I get it on Titan because at the time you didn't have the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
He wasn't aware that they existed yet. So he's like, okay, we are running out of resources. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a random draw.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not ideal, but it's going to help.
Yeah.
It's going to help everyone in the future. Like so that I kind of understand. So he made some really, really good points for why he wanted to do what he was doing. But when it came down to, I now have this infinite power, it's like, why are you still on this train of this? Because he made it seem like, I care about the galaxy. I care about everyone in it. I care about, you know, all the people and all the children who's, you know, with empty bellies and everything. Like he cared about all of that. So if he cared so much about those people, why wouldn't he try and make life better for everybody?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where like my issue came from. Now I know that in the comic books, there was actually Death who informed him of the Infinity Stones. She told him about them. And again, like tying it back, like he is known as the Mad Titan. Like that's kind of what he's become known as. He's the Mad Titan. So to kind of have him be, his character wouldn't have had to have changed at all. Like how he spoke, how he behaved,
would
have been able to stay the same. But had he mentioned something about Death, or speaking about Death as if it were an entity, even if it didn't actually exist, it kind of would have tied into that Mad Titan thing, almost like how crazy people don't think they're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like that little bit would have just. I felt like it was a circle that was like trying to meet. And it just couldn't quite get there. Like two breaths away from actually like, you know, becoming a complete circle. And it was so close to being there, but it just didn't quite make it. And I think that is my major issue of it. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to mention Lady Death in future films.
Well, and that's the other thing too, that I always have to dial myself back a little bit when I get over critical about some characters' arcs and stuff like that. It's like, well, we maybe didn't get an arc. Maybe we only got halfway because there's another film and you can't look at it necessarily until you see the next one and be like, oh, okay,
it's true.
I can totally see them fixing because I don't necessarily, because you don't know if they're broken. Like they could potentially close that loop, but it is very unsatisfying to not have, you know, when you've picked up on something like you have with his motivation, it's really unsatisfying to not have that closure.
It is,
you know?
And I think that's, I feel very unsatisfied.
Yeah. And because of that, you know, it's hard to then gauge character motivation. Like one of my biggest beefs in writing is character A does something because the script says so versus because you as an audience member go, that makes total sense for that character because I've gotten to know them over act one and act two. And so their self-sacrifice in act three makes a lot of sense. And then you feel a lot more emotionally, you know, attached to it. Whereas if you're just kind of, if you're just along for the ride, then it's not nearly as satisfying a journey. Speaking earlier about limitations, Time Stone, Mind Stone, Soul Stone. Okay. Those are out as far as I know, those would be out for creating unlimited resources.
Right.
Power Stone, maybe. The Power Stone to me, in terms of how they've portrayed it in the films, speak to personal power, not necessarily power generation, if that makes sense. But then you've got the Reality Stone and the Space Stone. And I've got Reality Stone, I'm guessing. I don't know whether that focuses on warping people's perception of reality and their minds, which is weird.
Actual reality.
Exactly, or changing physical reality. Because then there's the Mind Stone. It's like, well, the Mind Stone, but the way that the Mind Stone, I think, refers to intelligence, not to the subconscious mind.
Right.
Right. But then Space Stone, I mean, space is nothing. So, like, and it's something from nothing. So you know, if anything, I think your best bets are the Reality Stone and the Space Stone. So there's mm-hmm. definitely room for like, well, the Gauntlet could create infinite resources as far as I right. know. But again, that to me is an error in the creation of the Gauntlet in the first place. Like, it's, you know, like it's just yeah. like, what
I mean,
are
like,
we using
I can
this?
Kind of chalk it up to like comic book logic.
Well, yes.
Where
yeah.
it's like, well, we just have the super infinite thing and yeah. it just yeah. exists because it's comics. Like, I can kind of see yeah. that. In the same vein, though, I can also understand like why Thanos would just be like, I'm just going to kill everyone just because. But like, yes. I kind of felt like with the motivation they gave him in this film, it was such a strong and clear and noble motivation, like mm-hmm. I want to save the galaxy, that for me understanding why his reasoning was to kill everyone just didn't quite fit. It was almost like, I need to kill everyone because the script says I need to kill yeah. everyone. That's just what I'm doing. That's kind of what yeah. I felt like it was going on about.
For me, when I came out, I was comparing him to the Joker. So Batman's the Joker is this, like, he's just chaos. Like, there's no yeah. order to anything. It's just, he kills people because he's just trying to incite a little chaos. Like, it's just pure madness for madness sake.
Yeah, he's and, like, chaotic evil.
Exactly. But for me, yeah. Thanos was evil and was mad, but it was about order. It was about putting
was
things in
evil.
Line
yeah.
and getting everything sorted the way that he saw it. And the only thing in the things in the movie that kind of helped steer me that way were references to things like the children of Thanos, when they're obviously not like his real children. They're people that he has collected yes. under his leadership over the thousands of years that he's been doing this. And it's also the way that he treats, like, for whatever reason, he saves Gamora, and it's not, it's for, yes. he doesn't do it out of any feelings for her. It's purely selfish. It's like, I'm
you know what, though?
Choosing
I think
you.
He does really care for her, though.
Oh, he does now, but I mean,
he learns to,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the very, very beginning, when they show her as a little girl, where half of her population is just destroyed by his invasion, and he takes her aside and teaches her how to do something with a knife so that she doesn't witness the carnage behind her.
Yeah.
Which is just like, it's unsettling to the point where, like, he's obviously off his rocker. But for me, like, it's one of those things where he's not picking her up and deciding, I'm going to take you under my wing. You're going to be my plaything. Not for her benefit. It makes him feel good. Like, it makes him mm-hmm. feel, you know, the reason, and at the end when he snaps his fingers and half of the population of the universe vaporizes into ash, it, for me, it's less about Thanos choosing who's going and more about him choosing who's staying for his own entertainment. There's a, he hints at it when he's in a fight with Tony Stark.
I did get that.
And he's just kind of like, I like you, Stark. You've got gumption or something to that line. He doesn't say that, but he says something along those lines like, yeah, you're actually a pretty sturdy human for humans. You know, as far as humans go, I think I'll let you live. He does it for his own entertainment. He could easily just snap his neck. I mean, he killed Loki in the first 5 minutes of the movie. So Tony yeah. Stark is not an adversary. He's just toying with everybody. And yeah. to me, that's where I was kind of thinking, like, okay, this madness, it's got this power trip to it. And that's where I was getting his, I would say, well, I'll say motivation loosely because of, you know, our conversation. And where I think that, you know, I agree with what you're saying. But his motivation thus far for me was just out of pure, not because the script says he's a bad guy, but because he's just malicious. Like, he's just grown to be, people don't respond to kindness and in his view, people don't respond to kindness and reason, much like, you know, maybe the world that we live in don't listen to environmentalists. And, right. and people that are saying like, look, things are changing. We need to do something about it. And then the powers that be going like, whatever, that's fault, you know, fake news, you know? And I feel like there's some real parallels with some of the issues that they're bringing up in the film with what, you know, the world is going through right now.
I think that,
like you said, they, on that theory as well, that's a very personal thing. I've not had that conversation with a dozen other people. It's only me that's kind of come up with that. So
right.
I'm curious for people, especially in our Discord chat, but if you're listening to this and you've got your own theory or your own thoughts on Thanos, his motivation, then let us know. It's thesigilcafe at gmail.com. Or if you're already in the Discord, hop into the spoiler, because there are still some people in the Discord that have not seen Infinity War. So just hop into the spoiler room and let us know what you think about his motivation, because I think it's a really cool conversation to have. But I guess one of the things that that really kind of leave you in a lurch at the end of this film is the number of people that are no longer there.
Yeah.
Like, it is hard.
Every single really one of hard. My favorite people are all gone.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's awful.
I wonder how they chose it. Like, did they throw darts at a board? Because
well, what I did notice, though, is that all the original Avengers from the first Avengers film are still there.
Still there, yeah. Now, the thing that I thought was really strange was that you have this really emotional moment where the Scarlet Witch has to kill Vision. She does it. Mm-hmm. Then Thanos undoes it and kills him anyway and gets the stone. So not only did she have to kill her love, but it's all for nothing.
Yep.
Now, to me, a really interesting thing to do with that character would be to leave her alive so we have to deal with the tortured Scarlet Witch.
That, yeah.
You know, like,
I mean, if you're going to torture people, you may as well go all out, right?
Like, right. But going. Then she's one of the people that disappears. It's like,
I know.
Well, shit. So
I'm wondering if they're trying to pare it down, like basically tie it back around to the original six.
Yeah.
Which, so interestingly, Hawkeye wasn't in this film, and a lot of people were really upset about that, but I do know for a fact that Jeremy Renner was on set, because I do follow him on Instagram, and he was like, oh, I'm here on the set of Avengers.
Yep. Well, they filmed both of them at the same time.
They did, yes. Yeah. So I do know that he's going to be in the next one, which means that he's not vaporized, at least in my brain.
Yes.
Especially with that hint of, you know, leaving all the original Avengers alive.
They also mentioned both Clint and I can't remember Ant-Man's real name.
Scott.
Both of them being on house arrest because they struck a deal with the government. I think Black Widow says that.
Yes.
So to me, I think we're going to get a glimpse of Hawkeye in the new Ant-Man movie. I think Ant-Man and the Wasp is going to have a little touch on with Hawkeye.
Yeah, definitely. Possibly. Yeah.
I think that
movie is kind of backtracking a little bit. It's happening a little bit after Black Panther,
right? So it's in,
it, or at the same time as Black Panther,
because they bumped the release of Avengers up.
Yes.
So I don't know if this is necessarily the order that we were supposed to get them in, but for whatever reason, Marvel decided that this is the order that we're getting them. So I despite our picks with Infinity War over the course of this conversation, I am on board with whatever Marvel wants to do. Like, if this is how you envision us seeing these movies in this order, sweet, let's just do it.
Yeah. I think it's a cool timeline thing too, because if you look back enough, like even with like the other films, they all kind of happen at within the same time, but they're all released at weird times as well.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like at least the original ones, but like after, like Iron Man 2 is kind of released in between the Avengers and something else.
Yes.
And it kind of ties back in on itself back, in a weird way.
And then so, like, I mean, Ragnarok.
I feel like they've already made that continuity. Yeah.
And Ragnarok they hint either, I can't remember, but at some point I think in Ragnarok they let you know via character conversation that Banner's been missing for like 2 or 3 years or something.
Yes.
You know, so there is definitely time passing in between the movies, like a lot of time.
Yes. Yeah. For sure. Well, I mean, it's been 10 years for the whole
10 years and almost 20 films.
Yeah. Well, 10 years since the first Avengers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Started in what, 2003?
10 years since the first Iron Man, which was 2008.
Oh, really?
Yep. And that's
okay.
And that was the first appearance of, I think the Tesseract was the first appearance in Iron Man at the end. Because I think
it? No, that was at the it was Captain America, wasn't it? The Tesseract.
So
that was a major part of the
Captain America, that was when you get to see it in the film. I think the first appearance of the Tesseract was in the clip at the end of Iron Man.
Was it? Okay.
Like the post-credit Nick Fury kind of nod, I think. I'd have to go back and see what clip, because each clip goes with a different film. I think at the end of Iron Man, I can't remember which one had the Thor clip, but one of them had like Coulson in the desert. and it was about Thor's
hammer.
Oh,
that was at the end of Iron Man 2.
Okay. So I think it was like Iron Man, Tesseract teaser, Captain America, the First Avenger with the Tesseract in the movie. I don't remember what was at the end of Captain America, the First Avenger, as far as a teaser. But then there was also a Tony Stark bit at the end of The Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton.
Yes.
So they started in 2008. So it's been 10 years and almost 20 films.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. And they all tie together. Like, it's just, imagine the cork board at Marvel Studios with all the string going between.
Oh, man. Probably like stretched over 5 different offices until like, all right, now we got to make sure that this timeline's normal.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And especially now that there's a time stone, like, oh, God, like, forget it.
It's true.
But so we lost.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
I was going to say one thing I wanted to mention before we go off a little bit on too much of a tangent. I was talking about the CGI of the film. I just saw my note here.
Oh, yeah.
For the children of Thanos, however you want to say
I say Thanos, but I flip-flop sometimes. Okay. I say Thanos, but sometimes I flip-flop.
What was it? The children of Thanos. I had an issue with Proxima Midnight. How she looked. She looked like she walked straight out of a World of Warcraft game.
And she did have
a vibe. Not a bad look.
No.
But if the whole film had been done in CGI, she would have looked freaking rad.
Yeah.
But she looked really, really plastic. And that was like my one CGI issue with that whole thing. For the most part, I thought the CGI was excellent, but she looked very like, it was very Uncanny Valley with her face. Like, I feel like with like Ebony Maw was a little bit, you know, it was better. Like, he had no nose and he was long and kind of looked like Squidward. So,
and I think, they make that joke in the first couple minutes of the movie. It's so good. Too. Yeah. Tony Stark says it. Yeah. It's really good. I think too that it's the Uncanny Valley thing. And immediately, and I know I've mentioned this to you before, I got I'm blanking on her name now. She's the Banshee from World of Warcraft.
Banshee or
she's the Banshee.
Sylvanas Windrunner.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's not a Banshee technically, but she looks like one. So
leader of the Horde.
Sylvanas. Yeah. Like she and, Proxima, what's her character
Proxima
name?
Midnight.
They looked very similar in terms of from the chin to the eyebrow sort of motif. They really have the same glowing eyes. They've got the same sort of demeanor, almost the same voice in terms of, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think that's where the other children of Thanos really don't make you think that way, because one is a 12-foot tall, crazy monster guy. The other is this really skinny, like inhumanly skinny, weird looking, telekinetic guy, the Maw.
He was really interesting to watch, though.
Yes,
he was,
and good acting.
That fight with Doctor Strange was real good.
Oh yeah, like real good. He had this calmness to him, and he gave you a lot to pick apart. And I think part of the problem with Proxima Midnight was that she had a lot to say, but she didn't really say much with her face. Like there wasn't a lot of subtlety there. It was also kind of hard to see. Like, I went back and looked at her in the comics versus her in the movies. And granted, I like the idea of what she looks like in the movies better than the comics. Because in the comics, she looks like she was Hela's kid. Like, she's got this almost the same headgear as Hela. Like, smaller, but like that sort of idea. But she was not nearly as unique as she could have been. And the contrast in the design made it very hard. If she was doing subtle things with her eye movements, you couldn't see it because it was all dark. Yeah. Whereas her partner in crime there, the guy that looked like a giant elf from the depths of hell, he, being all CG with long ears and a long chin and a long nose, like, he was very much not human-like. I didn't mind him so much because, yes, I knew he was animated, but I'm dealing with Thanos, who's 12 feet, not 10 feet tall and also animated. You know, so I think that for whatever reason, you nailed it. The Uncanny Valley with her was just not quite there.
Yeah.
Whereas the reverse is true of Thanos. Like, not once in that film until the end, when I was thinking about it, did I really go, wow, they really did a good job animating Thanos. Because he's not a real character. He's like that.
He's not.
Never once is there a physical Thanos in the film.
Well, I wonder if it, like, for filming purposes, it was mocap, because his motions were very naturalistic.
Oh, absolutely.
In the way his facial expression. Yeah. So I'm wondering if they did some, like, facial mocap.
Oh,
and stuff.
Absolutely. It's all a combination. The same way they do the Hulk, with where he looks like Ruffalo. And he has the same kind of expressions and stuff like that. Like, they have dots on his face, and there's cameras in there. And I mean, I get how they did it, but I just love that we've come so far where a character voicing Thanos, they make Thanos look just a teeny little bit like Brolin, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it still looks like Thanos, but right around the eyes and right around, like, just where the nose kind of meets the mouth, but not below that, because of course Thanos has got a very odd chin and stuff, but like they really do this fantastic job of capturing where the actor probably does most of their acting. You know, like with Ruffalo, he's got a heavy brow, he's got I don't want to say big cheeks, but he's got prominent cheekbones, so they keep those in the Hulk when he changes. And so when he squints, he does a lot of squinting up, you know, with like the bottom of his eyelids, and that I think really helps it look like the Hulk, look like Ruffalo. And
it's true.
They just, like, it's just so, see, like there's a whole points where, like, well, I mean, gosh, Spider-Man in the movie, most of him, it's not really, you know, he's a CG guy flipping around.
CG, yeah.
Yeah. There's some fantastic interviews with Tom Holland where they're grilling him.
I love Tom Holland.
He is incredibly entertaining. I would love to see a full interview with him. I only ever see these five minutes. You know,
you can't see a full interview with him because he spoils everything. He's not allowed to be in an interview.
But the Graham Norton interview where they're asking Tom Holland about this stuff, and he's like, "No, I'm not kidding. I don't know what the suit looks like." And Graham's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, here's the thing. I'm on set with long pause, other heroes that I can't name." And they're in their $100,000 real costumes. Like, you can poke them in the arm and they've got their stuff on. I'm in a leotard with dots on it, because his suit is so functional in the film that there's no way to do it practically. There's probably only a couple of shots where he's got his hood off, his Spider-Man mask off, or he's talking to Doctor Strange or whatever, that he's probably in like a Spider-Man thing. But even then, it's only from like the armpits up, in terms of the shot. So they can probably get away with it. Anyway, like all of that stuff was just really, really fantastic. I mean, never once for a minute do you question a talking raccoon in this entire film. You know, like,
you don't know.
No, it's
I mean, you know, he's CG, but
yeah. Yeah, no, you're totally on board with the whole thing. I think they did really, really well with it. The lighter moments we mentioned earlier, I think my favorite kind of stint with all that was the Thor Rocket Groot adventure.
That was a good little side adventure. I don't know, that was pretty great.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. I think
I also really like surprise Peter Dinklage.
Yes, yeah, that was fun. That. Yeah,
I made a stupid joke in my head. Just, I'm like, that's probably the biggest role he's ever played, and then I just thought I was really dumb. I was like, why was that a thought in my head?
Well, and to put him in the movie and have him be 40 feet tall was also really cool. I like how they took it back to some of the roots of Thor, you know, like in forged, like that, how Mjolnir was forged in a star, and how his new axe is forged in a star. And I don't know, in the comics, people can correct me if this is true, but the handle of Thor's new axe, in the movie, Groot made it. And I don't know whether that's the case in the comics. I looked up some images, and it's got that kind of gnarled handle to it. Like, it doesn't look like it's a perfect thing. It's got this very grassroots look to it. So,
looked that far into it.
Yeah, me either.
Honestly, but
the other things that kind of stood out for me in terms of just like the things that you expect from a Marvel movie and are just really happy to have, or just little things like Captain America and Black Panther charging across the battlefield and running faster than everybody else. Like, you're just kind of like, yes, like the superhero man moments that you want from Justice League that you don't get, you get whenever Captain America is on the screen. Trying to think about what else that they handled just so, so well. I really enjoyed the way that they interacted with Thanos too. Like, you've got Iron Man,
Doctor Strange,
Spider-Man,
Peter Quill
and Mantis and Drax. Like, all of them are fighting Thanos at once. And
yeah, that was a cool fight too. Yeah, that was good choreography.
And they all feel like they're landing. It doesn't feel like they're fighting some imaginary thing. Like they really
yes,
they really do. And you've got this mix of like Tony Stark half out of armor. So you're really looking at Robert Downey Jr. Like you're not looking at CG. You're not looking at CG Robert Downey Jr. Like you're looking at real actor. But his suit is animated, and like they really kind of set the bar very, very high in terms of the immersion that they were expecting you to. You're also not on Earth. Like I did not expect to be in space with those characters. Like Peter Parker and Iron Man did not expect to not be on Earth for most of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like it was an eye-opening experience that did not take it in the way that that I expected. I'm curious as to how they reverse things, because obviously, if you're just looking at release dates, Avengers Infinity War Part 2, currently unnamed, comes out before Spider-Man Homecoming Part 2. So,
Yeah.
As heartwrenching as it was to watch Peter Parker
together,
die,
but
you know, like, because he doesn't like die at the hands of Thanos, but he vaporizes with half the population at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's where you think like, okay, this is one of those situations where in a world where we know the releases of all these movies and all this stuff has been road mapped and all the nerds have been digging into this kind of stuff, it does sort of take away from the, oh shit, they just killed Peter Parker moment, because you know, it's obviously not going to be permanent. But I really like, I think Vision is gone. I don't think you're going to see Vision again.
Really? I wonder if they're going to try and fix that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Viz a lot, but yeah. I have to say, I find the relationship between Wanda and Viz to be very odd. I don't really know how I feel about it. I've always thought that was a really strange relationship that developed, because when I think of Wanda Maximoff, I think of someone who's a little bit older.
Right.
And this Wanda is quite young. She's like in her mid-20s. And, you know, Elizabeth Olsen is in her mid-20s to late-20s, and Paul Bettany is in his 40s. So it's kind of, I don't know. I think he's 45 or something. For some reason, my brain is a hard time wrapping around it. I like their relationship, but at the same time, I'm kind of just like, that's an odd one. That's for some reason. I find it really weird. I also find the weird relationships they're trying to push at people. The whole thing with, like, Natasha and Bruce. I find that's a really weird pairing as well. Like they tried to make them an odd couple, which I thought was kind of strange. It just doesn't feel like it fits really. Hmm. A couple moments that I really liked in this, you were mentioning Black Panther and Captain America, like running across the field. And that was a really, the whole fight sequence I think was super, super excellent. There was a really, really great practical explosion effect where, Falcon drops a bunch of bombs like in front of like the side of the force field, I guess. And like, you can see the actual explosion. It looks so cool. And I think my favorite moment was when Thor dropped in.
Oh yeah. He wins the entrance award. That's for sure.
The best entrance I've ever seen. I think he was my favorite character arc throughout the entire film. That was Thor.
It's the only time you get the Avengers theme proper too.
It's true. Yeah, it's true, which is really interesting.
Yeah. Because I think it's the first time they're all together in the film.
It's true. Yeah. No, you're right.
But all the original Avengers are on that battlefield when he arrives.
Mm-hmm. Which is fantastic. Man, that was so good.
Right? Like, I know we've been kind of picking at parts of it, but like, there are some damn good
moments. There's some
moments.
Really amazing moments in this. Yeah, like, like you said earlier, just because you like something doesn't mean you can't criticize it.
Oh, exactly.
I liked the film. I liked, well, at its core,
it's
I liked
interesting.
It.
It's more interesting to talk about the character motivation and the plot stuff than it is to talk about, like, how cool it was when he punched the sky. And like,
No, I really did like Thor's whole character arc. I think he's my favorite Avenger. He's always been my favorite Avenger, but I really, really liked him as a character in this film, because you see him right from the very, very beginning. Like the end of Thor Ragnarok is right when Thanos shows up and is like, all right, I'm about to hand your asses to you. You see all of his people dead. And he still manages to persevere through that. Like, he still manages to fight through that. And, like, even that conversation he's having with Rocket, he's like, yeah, I'm 15,000 years old. And, like, you know, all my people are dead. My father's dead. My brother's dead. I mean, I think he's dead. I don't know. But, like, what else can I lose, really? And you can see he's, like, he's torn apart. Mm-hmm. But he's still ready to do everything with a smile. And I don't know. I think that it's really, I don't feel like you see Thor get very knocked down very often. Like, when he does get knocked down, he's usually able to bounce back up pretty quickly. But you can see that it's weighing very, very heavily on him. And the what's happened, you know, at the end of the film is going to weigh very heavily on all of them for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, I liked that a lot. I liked how you can see how everyone is going through this, oh, shit, we're in trouble sort of thought process. So,
yeah, I'm trying to remember who else, because Black Panther is still around.
Did he? No, nope. That's what I mean about all the favorites.
Like, so many people die that it's actually hard to remember.
Vision,
Loki. Black Panther, Loki,
Gamora,
Scarlet Witch,
Falcon,
Groot. And that's what I mean. Like, it's so odd that, like, some of these characters were like, you're like, okay, they've got to kill some people. They've got to systematically. Yeah, Drax, Peter Quill. I mean, like, if they had any plans for Guardians of the Galaxy 3, they got to fix this first because there are none left except for Rocket.
Which is sad. Oh, no, that's really upsetting. I forgot. Rocket's all alone. He's always had Groot.
Yeah. He's always had everybody. Like, there's the whole crew, right? And I think, so, I mean, that there's a number of things with the people that are vaporized, like, there's some people that I kind of expect them to bring back, and then other people that I would think that they wouldn't bring back, sometimes for no other reason other than, like, maybe the actor is ready to move on, you know, like, stuff like that. I don't necessarily think we're going to get Sam Jackson back. I don't think.
No.
I kind of feel like they want to take it into another phase where it's no longer, because S.H.I.E.L.D. is gone. Like, it's like that doesn't really exist anymore. I think they're just going to take it to a different level.
Well, I know that the next Avengers is Chris Evans' last as Cap.
Oh, is
as
it?
Well, but I know that he's only signed on for, like, one more. I think his contract is done. But I think the person who takes over for Cap afterwards is supposed to be Bucky.
Oh, okay.
Canonically in the comics, he's supposed to be Bucky. So I'm wondering if Sebastian Stan is going to be taking over as Captain America.
Maybe
Bucky Barnes, Captain America.
Interesting.
Because he does use the shield as well. Like, he's able to use the shield. So.
Oh, okay. Cool. He's got a new arm too.
Mm-hmm.
From Wakanda. There's just so much to unpack. Like, I definitely want to go see it again. Because I know I missed an awful lot.
You almost have to with something like this. I mean, a part of me is like, do I want to go watch all my favorite people die again? I'm not really sure if I'm ready to emotionally put myself through that. But
I know we're dealing with, like, this Time Stone Infinity Gauntlet stuff, but I really kind of feel like Gamora and Vision are gone.
I hope not. I especially for Gamora, just the way she was killed off. I mean, I understand it, but at the same time, it's like, all right, let's just, you know, freeze another female character for another male character. Part of me is like, no, bring her back. Please bring her back.
I think for me, a lot of it is like the people that were just kind of like evaporated into ash by Thanos snapping his fingers. Those to me are like the easy undoes.
Yeah.
Whereas you've got people that were actually killed before that happened, like long before that happened in the film.
You're I'm wondering. No,
not really sure if that's the thing. The other thing that we were talking about in the Discord, I think Chris was saying that he hopes the second movie is not Avengers go get Infinity Gauntlet and just undo everything. I don't know how they fix things if that's not the case, but he mentioned in his little sentence, like, you know, everybody goes and gets the Infinity Gauntlet and then Doctor Strange flicks everything back with the Time Stone. Problem, Doctor Strange died. Like, he's also gone. You know?
That is something interesting that I saw, that he was like, when he was looking through all the different timelines of when they beat Thanos, there was one timeline where they won.
Like 14 million or something stupid.
And I'm wondering if they're going to kind of dimension travel a little bit. I wonder if that's a thing. Because, like, at the beginning of the film, he says, if it comes down to you and the kid and the stone, like, to Tony, I was like, I'm taken the stone.
Yep.
I will not hesitate to let you guys die if it's for the stone.
And then he just
But 180s. He ended up giving up the stone.
Yeah.
He 180s completely. Yeah. So you could assume this is after he also saw those different timelines as well. So one could assume it's like, oh, I have a change of heart and I've, you know, seen the error of my ways. Or it could be, this is one of the timelines where we don't win, but it's different in a different one. And maybe he's going to, I feel like with Doctor Strange, I feel like he can know any timeline at any time in any dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So well, I'm wondering if
that to me is why Doctor Strange, why he said it's the only way, Tony, because he says it twice.
Yes.
Way, because he can't say to with Thanos standing right there, this is the only way we win. I have to give him the stone, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the case, is that he knows the timeline and he's the only one who does. So then he sets things.
So I think he's I don't know if he's able to contact his previous timelines or other timelines of himself.
I never thought about that.
Or I don't know if he can. So
he's tied to the time stone, maybe. So like if somebody gets the gauntlet, then Doctor Strange from through the time zone time zone, time stone.
Yeah.
See, this is why I don't like
tell. It gets confusing. It gets really weird. But so I'm wondering if that's how they're going to play it. Yeah. I mean, like, as much as I criticize this movie, I still really like it.
It pushes
all my buttons. I'm still going to go see part two.
It's interesting. It's fun. It's still fantastic sci-fi as well as being a superhero movie. Like, it hits all the right notes. That is, I think, all the time that we can really spend talking about Infinity War. If you have seen it or if you go to see it, then please let us know what you think, because I think that it's one of those things where everybody kind of comes away with it with something different, which is really cool. I think it's a mark of a good film. But we can wrap things up in the Internet Minute, and that is brought to you, of course, by you. If you go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, that is probably the best way to support this podcast and the things that I'm doing with it. You can become a patron. You can join the Discord chat. We have a spoiler room where we can talk about movies like this before everybody has seen it. We have general conversations about Lego and Minecraft and all kinds of other nerdy stuff, including some art stuff, which I'm going to get to in just a minute. Patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. That's where you go. It's completely up to you. We currently have 13 patrons, which I think is phenomenal. I would love to see that grow. I'd like to see that number go up at least one a month if we can. So if you are a patron and you have someone that's teetering on the fence and they're not sure what Patreon is, then maybe explain it to them and let them know that it's a great way to support creators and what they're doing. And not just the Citadel Cafe. Look for your other favorite podcasts on Patreon. Look for your favorite artists on Patreon. A lot of them already have those communities on the go. I think it's worth checking out. So the Internet Minute this week is actually artstation.com/Joel Duggan. But not a self-plug, because I really haven't posted new artwork up there in a long time. I have been spending my evenings for about an hour every night just kind of relaxing and cruising around on ArtStation, just because I really enjoy the search functions. You can search by media, like 3D, 2D, character, environment, etc. I've just been kind of like going through these big thumbnails and opening them up in new tabs and exploring new artists and new art. So one of the cool things about ArtStation is that if you go to artstation.com/Joel Duggan/likes or /following, all of them have links there for my profile. You can see the pieces that I've found that I've liked and the artists that I've found that I've decided to follow and get a notification whenever they post new work. What's nice about ArtStation is that it's not like Instagram. People are not taking pictures of their dinner, guilty, and updating you every 5 minutes about stuff that you really don't care about. I have a decent Instagram feed, and the people that I'm following is that they don't update all the time. Like, I get one or two posts a day from people. That's all I need. The people that I follow, even if they're a phenomenal artist and they post like 20 stories a day, I don't care. I'll skip the whole thing. Like, it's just too much. With ArtStation, these are usually finished pieces of art. They generally take a week or so to complete. So your people that you're following are only updating once in a while. I do get the ArtStation newsletter, which I find very helpful, because they'll say, hey, out of the, 130 people that you follow, here are 6 new pieces this week that hit your feed. And you're like, sweet. And you can check those out and kind of do it that way. My email is like a to-do list, so I find it's a great way to do it. But if you're into art, I like sci-fi, fantasy, comic book stuff, cartoony stuff. So my likes across ArtStation are pretty broad. But if you like the kind of things that we've talked about on the show today, then check out my ArtStation page and the people that I'm following and the pieces that I've liked. I think that you'll get a kick out of a lot of this stuff.
Amazing.
Oh yeah, it's so hard to not spend too long on there. It's such a satisfying experience, but at the same time, you're just like, okay, it's been an hour. I'm starting to feel like I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
I have to go now.
Yeah.
it's a black hole of awesome, but also heartbreaking at the same time.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Like whenever I go on there, I'm just like, oh, I wish I could draw.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my thought process.
But. Yeah. Whenever I find a Wonder Woman piece, I tend to send it to you. So
you do. So does Alistair.
Oh,
that's
nice.
One thing between both of you, Alistair, anytime there's a really amazing Wonder Woman cosplay or anything that's related to Wonder Woman, pretty much all the messages I get from Alistair are just like, here you go. And without any context, it's just, he just sends me something. If it's just Wonder Woman, I'm like, okay, I expect this. So yeah, yep. Good.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find out more information about the show, as well as show notes for all the things that Megan and I talked about today at thecitadelcafe.com. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought about Infinity War. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. And hey, if you like the show music, it was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and you can check out his music at the link on the show notes as well. It's royalty free, so it's really cool to use. iTunes is one of the best ways for the show to reach new listeners. If you like the show, then give us a review and spread the word any old-fashioned way that you know how. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. You can also check out my small publishing imprint at forgepublishing.com. Piper's got a bunch of new prints up in the store, so we're looking at spreading the word about her T-Historic Chinosaurs, which I think you guys will find pretty cute.
So cute.
And Derek Laughlin, who I mentioned at the top of the show, is a guest coming up on Comics Coast to Coast in June. So if you're curious about what he's up to, you can follow me there as well. Everything else is just my name. Megan, where can people find you and the stuff that you're doing online?
Everywhere. Most social media under Nerdasmic. That's it.
Short, sweet. And this is the end.
Yep.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Pick me.